Hello, and welcome to Book Reviews Kill, a podcast about fantasy, sci-fi, and horror novels. I'm Chad.
And I'm Evan.
You are listening to the Monday Morning Minute.
And this week in fictional news, a Golden Axe animated series is being produced by Lower Decks creator Mike McMahon? I think that's how you pronounce it. For those of you unaware, Golden Axe is a classic side-scrolling Sega game in which a cast of heroes must save the magical land of Yuria from the evil Death Adder. Okay, so I saw this on reactor.com and I was like, really? And then I kind of thought about it more and I was like, that actually might be pretty cool. Because like I play this game. Chad, have you ever played Golden Axe? I know you didn't really have video games.
I played Sega quite a bit.
Oh, okay. So you played Sega. Okay, so this was a Sega game.
I never played Golden Axe, no.
Okay. So Golden Axe is a weird game.
Yes, I have. I have played this game.
I knew that if you looked it up.
Totally. Yeah, no, I played this game before.
I played this game a lot as a kid, too. Most Sega games, I feel like they were just like, go to the right and hit everything you can along the way. But Golden Axe is definitely one of the most aesthetically pleasing of those crop of games. The music is really cool. It's a good franchise, and I feel like it doesn't really get the love that it should. So I think maybe it might translate pretty well, actually, to an animated show.
I remember it having quite a cool soundtrack.
Yeah,
just like a really Mega Man wannabe, but like a little bit more barbarian-ish, not so like digitized, you know,
you can
like a little
ride
less
dragons,
digital.
I think, in that, or like totally. Dinosaurs or something in that game. So I mean, it's the guy that did Lower Decks. I know that you really like that show.
I did,
never watched it, so I don't know. It could be cool, but
Lower Decks was weird, man. It was a weird show.
But I think that's the thing is like, I think that Golden Axe should be weird too. It should have that same energy. I hope it's like zany, you know,
like that same like we can enter the back rooms at any moment sort of energy.
Speaking of video game adaptations, did you watch the new Fallout show?
Okay, so I went and saw, and I want to talk to you about this later, but I went and saw Dune recently
in
the movie theater. And I saw a preview, or Dune 2, excuse me, and I saw a preview for the Fallout show, and I remember thinking to myself, like, man, that looks freaking awesome. Yeah. So I'm really excited to try it,
but I haven't watched it yet.
Now, have you?
I haven't either, but I've heard really, really good things about it, and it made me want to bring it up because like we were talking about this video game adaptation, and then apparently the new Fallout show is really good. Like, I don't know if it was because everybody's expectations were really low, because the video game adaptations are barely good. You know, like The Last of Us was really good, and I think it's really good.
So good, man. I cried like a child.
I think everyone thought that was a fluke, and then I think that with Fallout, everyone was like, all right, we'll see what happens. Apparently it's really good. So I'll report back next week, everybody. I think I'm going to start watching it tonight, actually.
Cool.
But I've been asked about it a ton. But I wanted to ask you, because I feel like you're always like way quicker with TV shows than I am.
So. I have fully intended to watch it over the last like week or two. And then just yesterday was reminded when I saw Dune 2.
Tell me about Dune 2. Let's go straight into your week.
Okay, let's just go straight into Dune 2.
Right when you mentioned that, I was like, let's make a whole podcast.
Let's do Dune 2. Dude.
I want to hear.
Dune 2 was the best movie that I've seen since Dune 1.
It's so freaking good, man.
So freaking good.
Yeah, it's
like
amazing.
It took me on a journey, and I kept thinking, like, oh, this is where the journey ends. Okay, cool. We're going to end. Like, there were multiple moments that I was like, this would be a semi-satisfactory way for it to end. And then it still led me on long a continued journey to this super epic conclusion that was just like, the last 30 minutes of that movie were incredibly awesome and needed to be. And I didn't quite think that it was going to do that for me. I was like, okay, it's going to take me to this point in the story where a bunch of things happen and he gets accepted and all these things. And then I was like, and then it's going to just stop abruptly. And then it did that. And I was like, here it comes. And then it was like, and here's a tasty final battle scene for you to end
with
on.
Giant,
and I was like,
Oh my gosh.
Like them riding the sandworms into battle and just like, man.
The fight with Fade Rotha at the end with no music. Like right before the fight started, I was like, there better not be music for this.
Nope.
And there wasn't any music.
It was just
music
this tingy, clangy, owie, like knife slice fest, dude. And I've trained a lot of like, in JKD, there's a lot of like different knife movements and stuff, and Kali, Eskrima. And as I watch them do these like knife fights, I can see the movements of some of these martial arts disciplines kind of like woven into how they're attacking each other. I'm like, oh, that's the like hubud, lubud, or whatever, which means to tie and untie the knot. And they're doing that like positioning with their hands. And there's just like, I could just see, and they had very, very good choreographers for their knife fighting. Because like a knife fight is really hard to make look real. because like yeah, I don't real. Know if you've like I've never been in a legit. Knife fight ever.
But, I can like, tell from my experience knife yeah,
like,
fighting.
I've never yeah, like I've never been in a knife fight, but I've sparred hundreds of hours of knife fighting, and it's always this little like flick fest. You think it's gonna be this hoobud lubud untie and tying the knot like cool looking thing, and it's really not. It's like this fast, really stabby, slashy, just mess their hand up sort of thing, so you can get at the rest of their body, stabbed sort of thing. And they manage to avoid it looking like that and still have it look like a real fight. Like when he's holding on to the dagger as it's like sliding closer to his face, and you can just feel the like filament layers of your hand being like divided as he's gripping that knife. You're just like, oh, it looks so terrible. Yeah, man. I couldn't be more impressed. I couldn't be more impressed with both of the Dune movies. They have both exceeded and surpassed my expectations on every level. I'm so pleased.
Well, I mean, I really liked the first Dune. And then when I went and saw it, the second one, I was like, just this is going to be about as good as the first one, probably.
Totally.
You know, like that was just my mentality going into it. And so my expectations were like fairly high. I mean, like, because I really liked the first one. And it was... Dude, honestly, it's like twice as good as the first movie. Like it really was like just an excellent, excellent movie. So I think it's out streaming here pretty soon too. I'm just gonna rewatch it because it's just I can't believe it took you that long to read.
Dude, I know. There's three other people in the theater.
Do you want to read the book now? Are you interested in that? Or is it do you feel like you've kind of like gotten your fill?
I've gotten my fill, I feel like, kinda. I'm not like inherently which is rare, because I feel like when I watch a good movie or show about a book, I'm always like, oh, let's watch it, let's read the book now. I think the problem is the book has a lot of baggage in my brain, in that like there's a lot of opinions online about the Dune series, and there's just some like, whenever there becomes like an aficionado, like someone who's like actually taking the time to learn Elvish, it's like, man, is that what I'm going to be exposed to in the book? Is it that level of depth? Am I going to have to study these books in order to get the story? Because I feel like I've got it right now. I'm like totally on board with the story. I went and saw it with someone who hadn't seen Dune 1. And so I gave them on the way. Yeah, on the way to the...
what a cool person. What an open-minded person to go to a movie with.
For real, thank you. JD, you're awesome. So on the way there, I was like... This is the world. This is where we're at in it. And I did a pretty like laudable job. I was actually pretty impressed myself. By the time we got to the theater, she knew everything about the movie. Wow. And during the movie, she would lean over and she would be like, oh, I know those are the bad guys, right? And that's the thing that calls the worms, right? And I was like, oh, that is exactly the thing that calls the worms.
Explained
like, the
little so
thump,
well.
Thump. Wow. Yeah, you know. So I thought I was pretty stoked in my explaining job. And it was actually very helpful for me because I gave myself a refresher course on the story. And from my level of understanding, not that it's super great or anything, but like I don't feel the need to deepen it, if that makes sense.
Sure.
I'm like, I like this story and I'm with it, and I don't need anything else to understand it better.
Yeah, I got quite a few DMs around the time that movie came out that were like, should I read the books? And it's like, I mean, if you're still really interested in what's going on with this, then absolutely, like they're good books. But like, also, it's kind of like with Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings, where it's like he really nailed it, you know? I mean, it's really good. I mean, if you want some more in-depth stuff and you want to keep going with it, for sure, I would say the first Dune book is definitely very good. Like, I think it's worth a read, absolutely. But on the other side of that coin, though, like if you really feel like you kind of like gotten your fill, then I think that the book differs in some ways. I was live streaming earlier and somebody asked me about this, but I feel like kind of like what Peter Jackson did with Aragorn in the movies, where he was like, he had Aragorn be like more conflicted about being a king, and then in the books he's a lot more kind of like, yep, that's who I am,
this is my
like,
fate.
And so Peter Jackson was like, let's add a little conflict in here and kind of like balance out the narratives a little bit. And it was a really cool thing for him to do, and I think that like taking that liberty made those movies better. And so with Dune, Chani and Paul's relationship in the book is it's a thing for sure, but it's like I feel like they like kind of pivoted a little bit more and like really focused in on Chani and Paul. And like, I think that I can't speak for Denis Villeneuve, but like, I imagine what he was trying to do with that was kind of like show Paul's evolution or de-evolution, if you will, like his descent into, you know, villainy almost through his relationship with Chani, which I think is was a perfect way to deliver that to the audience. And like Zendaya was incredible in that movie, like so awesome in that movie, and like
so good.
It's oh my god, the worm riding scene. Dude, I was watching that scene, I was just like, I'm watching cinematic history right now. Like yes. this is Aragorn charging the Black Gate right now. Like this is so cool.
And they do such a good job of not only like showing you the awesomeness, but also explaining to it. Like they were like, yeah, would yeah. zone in on how his like grappling hooks opened up the air filters for the worm. So obviously the worm would have to rotate that air filter to the top, so you can actually kind of control where they go really by controlling how the airflow, their little mm-hmm. air filters or whatever, are open. So because they obviously don't want a ton of sand in there, and so like if you open up their air holes, they'll navigate you to the very top, so you're getting the least amount of sand, so you can actually ride the thing. And so it was like, I'm sure that's part of the lore that they explained to me in the movie, but they just showed it to me and I got it.
Yeah,
and they did a really good job of, because I know that these stories, and that's one of the reasons, probably one of my hesitancies when it comes to reading them, is there's so much lore I could get lost in this story should I want to. I don't want to, really, just because of the nature of this podcast. I want to keep moving through different stories.
There's so much.
We could spend
6 months on Dune.
Totally. And I know the lore is there for that. And so I just don't want to get lost in that. But I really appreciated that in the movie they took the time to still present it to me. You know, be like, this is here for you should you wish to go farther. You know, so I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think Denis Villeneuve did confirm recently that he'll be working on Dune Messiah. I don't know if he was like, nice, this is happening, but he was like, yeah, I want to do it. I'm on board. And for Dune Messiah, doing two movies would make sense. I think it'd be cool to stretch it out. It's a shorter book than Dune. Also, it's like really dark. I mean, like, I don't know if you noticed.
The path he's on right now is not a light one.
Yeah, Paul is definitely, man, Timothy Chalamet crushed it. Like, oh my God. Man.
At no point did I not believe him.
No. Absolutely. No. Like he owned that role. Like,
and it works that he's kind of a pretty boy.
Dude,
he's
all
like
work.
It all works. You know, he's like a rich kid from like a bloodlined family that's been extremely privileged over the course of the last decade or
decades.
Decades.
But also been kind of like, it's, you know, the machinations, man. Like just,
man, I didn't, what I didn't expect from it.
Plans within plans, man.
Yeah. That's what kind of got me by surprise, was like how it's so clearly he's like this whole Messiah complex that he's the movie kind of is revolving around, that he's initially pushing away from him and then accepts by the end of the movie. It's all orchestrated by the Bene Gesserit. And you can see that, and they kind of take you back in time to see like where these seeds were planted and
like
how they've been watered and
like where he fits in all.
It's real cool. And they do a really good job of like showing that interchange between the different like factions of the Bene Gesserit.
Yeah.
And it really lent a depth to the movie. They're like, oh wow, we're seeing the like wheels spinning and producing of something that was started, you know, 200 years ago, like a generation.
And like the later
and a half
books like
this.
Really dig into some of that too. Like it's very everything's interwoven and everything. I think that the reason that I stopped at God Emperor, which is the fourth book, and it was just getting wacky, man. Like it was just like, I didn't know, I was having a hard time just kind of like retaining my interest, because I was always interested in it. It was like my ability to like really stick with it, like really latch on. And I think that a lot of people have that experience with Dune too, where it's like they read Dune and it's awesome. Dune Messiah is great. It's a cool, punchy little book. And then Children of Dune is like really weird, but it's a cool continuation of what's going on. And then God Emperor is like a solid book. It's really weird, but really cool. But it's also just like, you can feel everything starting to just like really kind of move in a direction where you're like, what the hell is happening right now? Like, but I don't know. I think at some point, I would like to have read all six of the originals.
Me too. You know? Like, I will be reading the books at some point. I just don't feel the need to start. Definitely not a 6-page series
Speaking of books, what'd you read? We took like 3 weeks off.
We did. Yeah. I took a lot of time to not read, which was good.
Yeah.
So like, I won't have, if you're like, wow, we really didn't read that much. I really didn't. I feel like, especially
we were going at a pretty steady clip there for a little bit.
We were going at it pretty steady for a long time. And it was, definitely in my brain, I was at risk of it moving from a thing from like, this is what I do for work, for like, or this is what I do for fun, to this is what I do for work. And it's like, that happened to me with martial arts, and it stopped me from doing martial arts for a few years, because I just like, I don't want to turn this hobby into something that I do for work. Like, if it begins to pay my bills, that's awesome. But I never want it to be in that category in my brain. It needs to be a passion, not a
I think it was a good thing that we took some time away from it.
Yeah. So all said and done, I think it's a real good thing that we took some time away from it. So honestly, I didn't really read that much. I did a lot of writing, which was really cool.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. The world of my book that my book is in is all nautical. Surprise, surprise. So it's all ocean sailing stuff. And I really had to like, it's been a while since I've studied up on my ocean terms. Like, the sailing is a whole different language, you know? And like, when you find that guy at the lake, never once have I gone to a lake to sail my boat. And had there not been some grisly character that comes out of the forest that says like, oh, Prindle 19, my dad had one of these growing up. And then we talk sailing for the next like hour or something, you know, which is obviously, honestly, one of the best parts of the experience. But so, yeah, I've been really focused on sailing stuff for the last like 3 weeks or something. And I read two of these tiny little books. Like, you'll see the size of this book. It's a teeny little guy. Little. This guy's called The Men of War: Life in Nelson's Navy by Patrick O'Brien. And it's just a little handbook about the different ships, the galleons, how many people were on them. Because it's like, okay, so you have a big galleon ship that's like a 3-leveled 110 gun ship.
Like
how big is that for real? And well, it actually can have up to like 212 people on that ship, and that's a ton of people.
Yeah,
it's a village. Exactly, it's like a floating little town. You nailed it. And so I've been doing a lot of research into that, just to kind of like add to the realness of my story, to make sure that I'm not having 500 people aboard a 200 person craft. And like, there's just little mistakes like that that I could easily make, and so I'm trying to avoid not making them. And then a book that has really been really helpful to me, that has also been hilarious, it's another tiny little book, teeny tiny, super small. I'm showing Evan. I know you guys can't see this, you're just listening, but it's just a tiny little book about the size of my hand, maybe like, I don't know, a knuckle deep, an inch thick or something. And it's just called The Pirates in an Adventure with Scientists, a novel. And it's like destined to become a classic of pirate comic fiction. And I'm not even sure what pirate comic fiction is, but this book certainly nails it. And that it's just a really funny little story about this pirate captain, but it's littered with actual nautical knowledge. And so it was a big help to me to kind of get me in the mood. Sometimes you have to like, I don't know, sometimes you, like, it's kind of like working out, right? You don't really want to do it, but you know that in the middle of it, you'll be like, oh, I kind of love this. You know, it's like you'll break through the barrier. And I feel that way a lot about writing, is sometimes I'll sit down and I'm just like, ugh, what do I even do? You know, like, where do I even start? So I'd pick up one of these books and I'd like read about pirates for a little bit. And I'd be like, oh, that's really cool. And that would like inspire me to start writing or something. I'd be watching a pump up workout video or something prior to going in and actually doing those workouts, just to kind of get you in the mode. So I did a lot of that, which was great.
Yeah, I typically will read a little bit before I write too.
That's what inspired me to do it, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember you saying that, and I remember thinking to myself, like, that's a really wise, like, warm-up.
Yeah, it really puts
you
in the mood for it.
Totally. Like, if I watch a video about, like, armbar, how to get into armbar from mount or something, if I watch a bunch of videos on YouTube before going to a jiu-jitsu class about that, I'm, like, way more stoked for the class.
Yeah. You got to get in the mode.
Totally. I'm working on Memories of Ice. I'm reading through it. You know, and I don't think I
pretty
am
dark.
Going to be... It's pretty dark. It's pretty,
pretty dark.
Woo. I'm still kind of reeling from my like lack of Carsa Orlong, because I really thought that this character was going to have him in the first half. And it's like, I don't know. It's just, it's a hard... There's so much going on and it's so dark that I'm just like, oh, God.
There's a lot happening in this book.
A lot is like, happening in this book. I would say this Memories of Ice is like a transitional book. Would you agree with that?
I don't know, because I haven't read the fourth one. So
sure.
I mean, I'm enjoying it for sure. And I feel like I am kind of like more cemented into this world by the third volume for sure. But I also just, it just kind of like sneaks up on you sometimes, just like the vastness of what we're actually reading, and
totally,
you know what
totally.
I mean? And like the brutality and
yeah,
like the seriousness of some of this stuff that's happening right now. But then like, you know, T-Rexes with swords for arms come out, and I'm like,
dude,
we're
out of the swamp, and you're like, all
this.
Right.
Like, so cool. But yeah, like there, it's, I think I'll know my It's funny, I don't usually say this kind of stuff, but I feel like I'll know more of my thoughts on Memories of Ice maybe after we're done with House of Chains, with the fourth book.
Yes.
Because it's dancing around a lot between the books and between the volumes, I should say.
I think the next book is kind of a culmination book. It's like not a transitionary book. It kind of comes to like, okay, we've been maneuvering these pieces for the last few books in order to set up this.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, we got a lot of Malazan to read.
So we're reading Empire of Storms for our Throne of Glass book. And I think my problem, which has been ongoing with kind of Sarah J. Maas novels, is like, one, these books just aren't written for me. Like, they're not. Yeah. They were not intended with like a mill, a like 34-year-old war loving, like, you know, and I love the older I get, the more like meaty I kind of want my stories to be in terms of lessons. I want to be able to like walk away and be like, oh, cool, because this character lived this life that resulted in these consequences. And like, this is the lesson that I can take from that and then apply it to my own life to be a better person and move me farther from chaos. Right. And sure. I find little light versions of those lessons within her stories, but I don't know if she's, and again, these books aren't for me. So if there's lessons here that I'm missing. And we're not finished yet. That's right. Yeah. So, you know, maybe there's some depth that I'm missing, but I feel like with Sarah J. Maas, I get a lot of a little, like a lot of little, little lessons, little cool things, little relationships, little depths, but like nothing that I'm like, that has me like up against a wall, reeling, like weeping as I'm reading it sort of thing, you know, which as I age and kind of mature into my book reviewing world, I tend to yearn for. I tend to latch on to those sort of stories. And again, like I said, there could be major lessons here that I'm just missing because these books were not written for me. That being said, man, she is punchy. She is, I've said this exact sentence before and I'll say it again. If her books were a jungle, they would be a forest, or they would be, if her books were a forest, they would be a jungle, and that they're just so colorful, so tactily, like able to latch on. Like, I know what's happening in the story. It's very simple.
Yeah. Like every time I like start reading it, I feel like I'm like kind of like falling back into the story a little bit more.
Totally,
you know what I mean? Like, it's definitely, she's very immersive, you know?
Yes. Extremely immersive. So I have nothing but good things for the most part to say about her writing approach. I'm also very aware that these books were not written with me in mind. And so, you know, take that as you will. They're very good books. Were they written for me? No, they weren't. But that doesn't mean that I'm not enjoying them, because I am.
I think I'm enjoying them a little bit more than you, which is fine. I mean, you liked Faithful in the Fallen more than I did. But I feel like with Throne of Glass, I'm just kind of here for the developments. And that's like something that I trust Sarah J. Maas to do. It's like, she's gonna hit you with a bombshell, dude. Like, it's happening. Just wait, you know. Just, and it's happened with the Empire of Storms, and we're gonna talk about it in the episode that's coming up. But man, like, it happened with ACOTAR too. I feel like it happens a little more often with Throne of Glass, where there's like a cool development and like some information.
Bum.
Yeah, I feel like that didn't happen a ton in ACOTAR, but there's one scene in ACOTAR that I definitely remember where like these. I don't want to spoil it, but there's like a scene where it's like a conference almost, and then like some people walk into the room, and it's just like, oh my god, like, what are you doing here? And I feel
exactly
like Throne of Glass like definitely has some more of those kinds of moments, which I'm just kind of here for those. And I don't know, I like the characters a lot too. I mean, Sarah J. Maas writes really good characters. I do agree with you in the sense that, yeah, maybe it's probably not that deep.
No.
But also, I don't know, like, I think that Maas also does a really good job with, like, mental health and how we deal with things and, like, our relationships to each other. And
if you're going into it for romantic,
you know, the way that, like, trauma shapes us and things like that, it doesn't seem like that romantic of a series, honestly. Like, I'm not really getting the romance vibe.
Me
as
neither,
much.
Either. Yeah, but I keep just kind of attributing to. That to me not understanding the story because it wasn't written for me. Because
maybe you wanted
a romance,
maybe you,
right?
Maybe you thought, no, it's not. It's a young adult fantasy series.
Maybe I just have it framed improperly.
Yeah, I think that you read ACOTAR and you were like, all right, so this is what we're doing. And you might be reading it with an ACOTAR eye.
I think I am.
Yeah, maybe drop that.
Yeah, no, I think that would probably aid me in this series. Because I really think that the framework that we put things in really is going to change our experience of that thing, you know?
I think we're going to have a really cool last few episodes for Throne of Glass. I have a feeling Tower of Dawn and Kingdom of Ash are going to be banger books. So
totally.
I'm excited.
Yeah, Moss has not let me down in her ability to tell a story. I'll put it that way, for sure. And I'm excited to read more. That's for darn sure. So I just finished earlier today, in fact, the second Combat Codes. I will be having Alexander Darwin on this podcast. Him and I have been talking. Our schedules have not lined up, unfortunately, these last few weeks. But we will be getting that episode out to you guys pretty quick here.
Yeah.
I love the Combat Codes. I've said it. I've bloviated about how much I enjoy his experience with battle and his description of it. And just like this one-on-one, mano-a-mano, face-off sort of battle, Alexander Darwin is truly a master of describing it. And it's because he has experience with it. And you can just tell that from reading it. So
I've heard his world build is pretty good, too.
Like it is pretty good, yeah.
I've heard good things about it.
It gets a little, like, would you really, like, have to hire, like, if you had a dispute with your neighbor? Like, if you take his idea down to its super base level, which he does a few times in the book, but very rarely, it's kind of silly, right? Like, if I had a dispute with my neighbor and I had to go get it adjudicated by having the state assign me a fighter, and then have you, if you were that neighbor that I was in opposition to, be assigned a fighter. And then those fighters would go into a ring to solve our, like, neighborly dispute. It seems kind of like a silly way to kind
it's
of, like...
a lot of bureaucracy.
And they even cover this in the book, so I'm not... This isn't necessarily a critique of it. They cover, like, there's just, like, no way that there's enough fighters. And so the little things like neighborial... conflicts don't get adjudicated properly because they never get assigned fighters. And so there's like kind of a hole in the system. It seems to work really big on like the large scale of like Poland thinks that this part of their land is like theirs and Russia thinks it's theirs, you know, and it's like, but when it comes down to, I don't know if they actually border with Russia. So sorry, Poland, if you do. I'm an idiot. Just don't listen to me. Okay. But, you know, I can get it on that level because it's like, yeah, we're stopping a conflict, like an armed conflict with thousands, hundreds, potentially even millions of people dying just by having these two people adjudicate this conflict. But when you boil it down to like this person's like a tax dispute with the state, then it seems kind of weird. And like, obviously, the state would be able to assign themselves a better fighter than fighter, right?
So it's like it'd be corrupted pretty quickly, probably.
Yeah, you could kind of like rip his world to shreds if you really like laser focus it. And he kind of does. He talks about that and it's a problem. Yeah. And so it's like it's not necessarily a critique of his books because he brings it up as a problem. But yeah, it is sometimes a little silly when you're like, okay, but you get down to the brass tacks of how the system works and you're like, yeah, but we can always be fighting for things, right? You know? So that's a little funny, but man, I really have been impressed with these books, and I think they're his debut books. I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, I think so.
But I think that's true, and they're very impressive for a debut book. And man, if you're looking for some one-on-one combat with some good like relationship interplay behind it, and in a school setting, which is obviously one of our favorite things in this podcast, it has all of that. So I would definitely recommend it. And the only other thing that I want to talk about is: have you watched a show called Shogun?
Okay, no. Because I want to read the books. Because
it's making ripples. There's books.
I know that show is, it's got like 100%, 10 out of 10 across the board. I'm going to ask you, I never ask you to do this. Let's just not get into it because I want to read the books and I want to watch the show. And I have to just like make that a black spot in my attention span right now because I know how good it is.
I will content myself with one sentence and that's
sure,
all I'll say. And then I'll hand the mic over to you in your week. It is absolutely worth every minute that every person is like, you should watch Shogun. They're right.
Yeah, I know. I'm fully aware.
You should watch it.
My reading schedule is so all over the place, and this might be one of those things where it's like, okay, Evan, just watch the show.
Dude, there's only like 12 episodes, or not even that many. I think there's like 8 or 10 or something.
I've heard it's incredible.
It's incredible, bro. It's incredible. It's Game of Thrones in Japan.
Oh wow,
it is. It's all the awesome you think it's going to be, and it's got all the funding. Okay, period. I said too much.
Okay. You said
but
too much.
It's worth it. Now tell me about your week. Tell me about your news. I think that you have some news that is rather large that everyone has been waiting for that you can finally talk about. So hit me, baby.
Okay. So yeah, I told everybody a couple weeks ago. If you somehow didn't get the news, Tor Books signed me on for 3 books.
Woo!
The first book is called Angie Kills a King. It'll be out next year. Pre-orders will be up in July or August, I think, and that'll be around the same time that I'll be able to show off the cover, which I still haven't seen. I haven't seen a cover yet. But yeah, it's huge. It has very much impacted my life for the
How
better.
How many words have you added in the last since you started the revising process officially under Tor?
Oh, like
with
a,
with an editor.
5,000. Oh, with Tor. Yeah. I think I added. It's hard to keep track of. I mean, because when I sent it to him, it was like. It was like 79,000 words, which like was pretty tightly wound. Like,
totally. It was punchy as hell.
It's sitting at like 94,000 right now, I think.
Wow.
And I might even add a little bit more. But for the second book, I'm drafting right now the second book while I'm also waiting for the edits to come back so I can do another round of edits with the second book in mind and stuff for like continuity's sake. But I'm trying to overwrite the second book, if that makes sense. Like, because I
so
didn't
you only
like
remove the, things.
Yeah, I didn't like the process of having to add stuff.
Okay,
I'm fine with it because like I'm happy with the stuff that I added, and you won't be able to tell, dear reader, like what I added and what I didn't.
I've
like,
never been able to from yeah, from to read. Though I'm like, a few iterations behind at this point.
Yeah, totally.
Major.
But for the second one, I'm definitely just kind of like I'm really letting loose and just like writing it. Just I'm taking my time with it and like really fleshing it out and It could still, I mean, the first draft of a book is, it's a disaster, man. Like, I wouldn't let anybody read this. Like, it is so gross. And like, I'm just trying to get the story out. But yeah, it's extremely exciting news. Like, everybody has been so supportive and so awesome. And my social media was just flooded with DMs with everybody telling me congratulations. And if I didn't get back to you, I'm sorry. It's been a whirlwind of attention over the last couple of weeks. And usually I'm very good at taking that in stride, but it was pretty overwhelming for a little bit, like a lot of well wishes. And I was very, very happy to get all of those. And I've tried to be as clear about this as I can, and I will be going forward. I am under no illusion that this happened without the social media following in mind. You know what I mean? Like, I did work really hard. That is a thing, but I'm not going to move forward and try to act like me having hundreds of thousands of followers on the internet didn't play some part in me getting a 3-book debut deal with Tor. I will say,
bro, I bet you variables all the time that have nothing to do with one's ability to write are included in people's decision making process
just,
as
just,
to who gets like I'm just like
saying,
the color of people's eyes because they resonated
to,
with
I
the person
like,
who made the final
have
decision.
Have it be
you know?
Recorded,
sure,
and
sure.
Like, and like I wanted, I just I'm aware. I wouldn't have gotten my agent. I might have gotten something. I don't know. It's hard to say. But
love the gratitude, but you're awesome. Own it.
The reason that I want to say that, though, is like I just want to like thank you to everybody that's been a part of this community,
that's fair.
Like that's been here for this ride and who's been really patient with me while I've just been kind of all over the place. I'll go like a week without posting anything sometimes, and I really am just hunched over my keyboard trying to write you the best possible book that I can write. Like I'm working really hard. Stephanie Stein, my editor, is working really hard. There's a whole team at Tor that's going to be handling marketing and PR and everything. And so
Evan's about to become a big deal. Everybody.
I'm trying.
Bigger deal.
I hope this book is good.
Dude, okay.
So
you mentioned
hard.
All of the congratulations that you received and they were a bit overwhelming. Yeah. Tell me if this is your experience with the internet, because I'm hovering around this theory in that like we all kind of think that the internet is kind of a toxic place, and it is and can be.
Oh, it is.
Especially in like a YouTube comment section, someplace that's like truly autonomous, you know. But like I really think that we as humans just have a natural propensity to notice the negative.
Yeah.
And I think that like I really think that, like 98%
like
of online is like so encouraging.
Yeah, everybody
so
was
encouraging.
Really cool. I mean, no, that's not to say. I mean, like I'm sure once this book comes out, obviously every book gets bad reviews. I'm sure a lot of those reviews will be colored with a kind of like, oh, this content creator thought he could write a book, whatever. Like I mean, yeah,
this content creator did write a book.
I'm doing my best. And I feel good about it. I you know me. I'm a perfectionist.
Dude, I feel good about it. I've read it.
Yeah,
I'm a book
like,
reviewer.
Yeah, like I I'm proud of it. I'm proud. It's a good debut.
You should be.
Thank you, man. Yeah, and I'm really excited for everybody to read it.
You've worked hard too, everybody. Everyone, like, you haven't seen the stuff behind the, you know, to say Evan.
Yeah,
Evan
Chad
Evan
and I have known about this since November, by the way. So
yeah. So like, Evan has worked very, very, very hard. In fact, it's almost surprising how well he's managed to become like an author, go from like non-author to be an author, because you've had to totally change the steps that you do throughout the course of your day. Yeah. And make your new life now. And you
it's been
really impressive to watch. Let me tell you, from like an outsider being like, oh, can my buddy pull this one off?
Dude,
you have,
hard.
Dude. And
yeah.
I have nothing but accolades to hand your way, dude, because it's been impressive to watch.
It. Dude, I really had to like, I'm boring. I'm a boring person. Like I I go on walks and I eat apples. And
got a dog.
Like, I don't have a dog. I need to get
Did
a dog.
Did he pass?
Huh? Oh, Lincoln. You didn't know about that?
No.
No way. It was in like, it was like last July.
Really?
Are you serious?
Dude, I thought Lincoln was like always at the foot of your bed or something for this last like year.
No.
Lincoln
no.
Passed. Wow.
I'm yeah, in July.
Oh, I feel like a bad friend for not even knowing that. Sorry, Lincoln.
I don't know if I brought it up to you actually, because it was just like,
I don't remember that at all.
Oh, wow. Sorry to dampen the hell out of the podcast.
Oh,
everybody.
Rest in peace, Lincoln, buddy.
I think the whole audience knew, but you didn't.
Yeah, dude, I know for real.
But no, I mean, I was thinking about, we were talking about maybe getting another pup. But I think it might still be a little too soon.
Yeah. When you still like have the expectations of like the old dog's like patterns, maybe. You know, then it's like kind of unfair to the new one, you know?
But yeah, everybody, it's huge news. I mean, it's still very surreal and very, let me just talk about this a little bit. Just
please bloviate. Go.
Because I've gotten quite a few questions about this and I've answered them like on different live streams and stuff. But just for everybody listening, I can kind of like walk you through a little bit of like, what happened? Like, what the hell happened? Why?
Sure, yeah. How did you become this?
Like, how this happened? So, in November 2021, I did a quick book for NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, and I had an idea for a somebody who killed a head of state and then ran away, and then a bounty hunter grabbed them and is dragging them back for their crimes. And I still have the note like in my iPhone from when I typed it all in when I was like half asleep or whatever, and I knocked it out. It was like 48,000 words or something, and I was like, that's enough, that's cool, I did it, you know. And I limped to the end of that thing, and then it just kind of sat on my computer
for
a couple
weeks. Was rough.
It was rough. Oh,
it was pretty rough.
So bad. Anyway, so I was on a live on TikTok, I think it was TikTok, and Seth Fishman, my agent, just happened to be in the live with another 30 or 40 people, you know. And I was talking about writing, and then he, in the comment section on the live, wrote, "Send me your stuff. I'm a literary agent." And so I screenshotted it, and then I hit him up on Instagram. I don't know. I found him on Instagram. I hit him up, and I was like, "Hey, I have something cool for you if you want to read it." And it was this book that I wrote in like 4 weeks. And he was like, "Okay, cool. Like, send it over." So I sent it over to him. And he got back to me like a day later, and he was like, "Nah, man." He was just like, "This isn't it."
Dude,
like, I can.
You were crushed. Evan was like, not having a good day that day.
Yeah, either, it was pretty like, brutal. Ooh. And he was definitely like very clear. He was like, obviously, like your line by line is great. You seem to have a knack for this in a way, but like this isn't grabbing me.
It was
like,
extremely constructive criticism. It wasn't just like you said.
It was a rewrite and resubmit. Thing. Yeah, he was like, work on this and get back to me. And that was in like January of 2022. And then I think at some point I had Seth on for an interview because, you know, it's cool to talk to people in the industry. And Seth is a really awesome, nice guy. And I want to have him back on, actually. It'd be really cool. We didn't really talk at all for like over a year. We kind of like exchanged. He'd hit me up and ask how the writing was going or whatever. I think we might have talked like three times in a whole year. And then I didn't really touch Angie at all, really. Like, I was working on some other stuff. I was working on some other stories that didn't really go anywhere. And then I've worked since then, some stuff that I'm excited to keep working on.
A few of which I really liked the initial idea for.
Totally. There's some good stuff. I've got a lot in the tank right now. This story was just kind of like on my computer. And then it very much in like Stephen King fashion, like Effie, my girlfriend, was like, that was a good book. Like, you just need to make it better. And I was like, I don't know if I really want to do that. Like, it's just, I kind of want to write something different.
Right. At that point, it's like, not creative flow work.
Did
it's
Effie
like
put
actual
her foot
work.
Down, man. She was like, that's the best thing you've written and you need to finish it.
Wow.
And I was just like, all right,
good for
well,
her.
Yeah, I was like, all right, well, I'll do it. And then, so that was in like May or June of 2023. And so I went back to it and I like let loose and I dug deep and I rearranged a bunch of stuff and I started from the very beginning and I did, I added a prologue and then I did chapters 1, 2, and 3 and I polished them. I did it the best I possibly could. I made it as good as I was capable of doing. And then I sent those 4 chapters to Seth and didn't really think much of it at all. And then like a few hours later, Seth got back to me and he was like, holy shit, this is awesome. Like, where's the rest of it?
Right.
And I was like, I'll have that for you in
a
couple
of
weeks.
Yeah, that's coming in my computer.
Yeah, I did not have it ready at all. Like, and so Seth, he was like, okay, cool. Like, well, send it to me when it's ready. And so for those 2 weeks, like I was working like 10, 12 hours a day just, and I did it. I banged it out and it was like 70,000 words by the time I was done with it. So I had added like 20 something thousand words to it, reworked the entire third act. Like I gutted that thing. And then I sent it to Seth and he didn't get back to me for like, I think it was almost 2 weeks.
It was
the longest 2 weeks of my entire life.
You were a stress ball. Yeah.
But then he got back to me. I remember very vividly the morning that I got, you know, and I told everybody on TikTok and stuff, but the morning that I got that email, he said, I'd like to officially offer you representation. And it's just, and for people that aren't writers or don't know much about the literary industry, getting an agent is huge. It's a very big deal. It means that your manuscript is not only good enough that somebody wants to take a chance on it, but it's like, it's going to be put in front of people. Like the chances of people looking at it. Yeah. Like the chances of people actually reading your book goes up by like a huge margin. Now, obviously you can still get traditionally published without an agent. It happened to Jason Pargin. It does happen to people, but an agent very, very much raises your chances of somebody seeing your book, but we weren't out of the woods.
If I may.
Yeah.
I would think like an agent is almost like a filter for the desk of the people who make the decisions, right? Because they get so many manuscripts across their desk that the fact that this one was submitted from an agent means that it's already been filtered by someone who knows what they're talking about in the industry and knows what sells and knows what makes money once.
Yep.
And so that is inherently more valuable than every other manuscript that's been submitted to that person that's on their desk because, and you know, and these aren't little manuscripts. These are full books that are being submitted. So it takes time to submit to one. So if you have 50 books that have submitted to you, you really have to kind of go through this process of figuring out which one am I going to read. And so the ones that have been submitted by agents, I would imagine get bumped to the front of the list.
Yeah. I mean, so having an agent was huge, but he had me revise and we went through 2 rounds of edits that took me months to do. So I sent him like a round and he was like, this is good, but like maybe shift all this stuff around, change this. And so I took some of that advice and I left some of it on the table, you know, and did my own thing. And we got it to a point where Seth was like, all right, I think we're good we can submit this. And so we went on submission in like the first week of October, I think, something like that. And this is my own like hubris or whatever you want to call it. I thought we would hear back really fast. I thought we would hear back in like a week because I had Seth and I was like, this is all great. Why would anything bad happen? So it was silly of me. And I was just like me working myself up and stuff. And I'm sure I'll end up doing it again at some point. I was just really excited. But we didn't hear anything for like a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, 5 weeks. And I was like, dude, what is going on right now? Like, but I did everything I could, like, and you know, it was silly because it's just a long process, you know, just always a long process. Everything is a long process. Me being able to tell everybody was a really long process, you know? But Seth finally emailed me while I was at work at the sushi restaurant that I was working at. He emailed me and he's like, hey, you know, don't let this get to you, but we got our first response. We got a pass. Which means that they didn't want it. It was a pretty big publisher. I'm not going to name them, but they have really good books and really good authors. But they passed on us, and I was just like, dude, I was just so... Because we hadn't heard anything, and then the first thing I heard was a pass, and like no interest at all from anybody, I was just like, damn, like this sucks. Like this is brutal. And so that night I got off work and I went home and I was talking to Effie and I was just like, I was in the dumps, man. Like I was so bummed out. And I was just like, all right. So there was just this, like 9 publishers that we submitted to. And I was like, it'll probably, I think DAW for sure might be into it. Or Ace or something.
Right.
But it's not going to be Tor. That was what I said. I said, it's probably not going to be Tor because Tor is too big. Like they've got too many awesome things going on with them. We're probably not going to hear anything back from Tor. So then I went to sleep. The next morning I got an email from Seth and he said, Stephanie Stein at Tor is interested. So we're going to set up a meeting. And then like a few hours later, he was like, okay, so HarperCollins is also interested. And I was like, oh, this is interesting.
Oh, now we've got potential bidding war here. Okay.
On a Thursday that week, I met with Stephanie Stein over Zoom because she lives in New York. And immediately I was just like, oh, this is awesome. Like you're really cool. You get this. Like, I would love to work with you. Stephanie has also worked with Ava Reed. So like she knows what she's doing. She's a very good editor. All the editors at Tor are like legendary, you know.
If you make your way to an editor at Tor, you probably know what you're doing.
So we had a really good meeting, and then I met with HarperCollins, and we had a really good meeting too. It was great. We talked about the book in a lot of detail, you know, and they were legitimately really interested. There was no point where I was like, I could never, I would totally work with HarperCollins. Like, I mean, they're a very respected publisher.
For sure.
So I was really excited about that. And then, but after mine and Stephanie's meeting, she said, I have to talk to my boss about this and we'll have an answer for you like next week sometime, like a week from today or maybe even a little bit longer. So I was like, okay, well, cool that this happened, but I'll talk to you later. And then so the next day I went to work. I worked a morning shift washing dishes at my sushi restaurant job. And so I'm at work and I was listening to an audiobook and it was like noon or something. And I was just like, washing fucking dishes. Like, and in my mind I was like, I got a week to chill, basically. Like I can't, there's literally nothing I can do from now until then, so let's just relax. The cool things look like they're happening, let's just let it sit for a little while, let this cook. But I got a call from Seth while I was at work. It interrupted my audiobook, and I like looked down at my phone and I was like, why is Seth calling me right now? Like, this is weird.
Should be a week.
He's been emailing me this whole time, he never calls
right.
And so I answered it and he's like, hey, do you have a second? Like, I've got some news for you. And I was like, okay, whatever. And then I like went out into the hallway outside of work and he told me, now I'm not going to name a number because it's kind of tacky.
But that's super tacky. Don't name numbers.
I'm not going to name a number. But the way that Seth told me about this deal was that he told me the price. He told me the advance that they wanted to give me per book as a single number, if that makes sense.
Totally.
And then I think he knew what he was doing. So like
he knows what he's doing.
He told me the number and I was like, holy shit. And then he said, but they want 3 books, so it's this much. And I collapsed. I like my legs gave out, and that's never happened to me before. Like when people say like you need to sit down for this, like they mean it sometimes. Like I had my seat.
I don't know if I've ever had trailer knock me off my feet.
It was ridiculous, and I cried, and it was like it was so intense, and I don't even remember the rest of that conversation
because of how good it was. This is a good reaction.
It was amazing. Yeah, it's so cliche. I mean, like it that phone call changed my entire life.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
And like, beat your expectations as to what you thought was going to happen.
Oh my God, did it do that? Like, I mean, like,
yeah, it did that to me
like,
too.
Yeah, like, I thought we were just outselling a book. I didn't know Tor wanted me to become an author with them for a few years. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I didn't know that that was the relationship they were trying to.
They play the long game.
Yeah.
They're willing to invest in
you. Dude, and Tor, like, I mean, dude, it's fucking Tor. Like, they're.
They've been making classics for years upon years upon years.
Anderson, Robert Jordan.
Right,
Greg
right.
Bear. We got like, V.E. Schwab.
The behemoths Scalzi, of the
Travis
industry.
Baldry. Like, yeah, like every dude. It's, and it's like, and the list just goes on and on. Like, there's just so many.
I forgot
good
Baldry
tour
was tour. That's awesome.
Yeah, like there are so many amazing authors with tour, and they've been around for so long, and they've just put legendary books out. And to be even like associated with that publisher, like it's amazing. So yeah, I mean, like, so that's you know, and then so we closed the deal up and everything, and Stephanie was really excited, and I've loved working with her because she's very like, I feel like she's very like supportive of a lot of my ideas, and she's very excited, and she really. She's very like cool with what I want to do, and she seems to share my vision for these
she's
books.
She's on board.
But also she's like brutally honest with stuff sometimes too, where she's just like, this doesn't make any sense, you know? And it's just like, that's exactly what I need, you know? And it's so she just has like such a good mind for it. And Seth also is very, very into fantasy books and knows what he's talking about. So I feel like I've got a really good team here. And I
know that their opinions were good ones, because many of the things that you told me to change were the things that I told you to change. Yeah. And so it just was really affirming personally. I really enjoyed reading their critiques, and I was like, oh yeah, baby, that's exactly what I told him.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, it's going to be a trilogy. So what happened with that is that when we met, after the deal closed, Stephanie asked me if we could do a duology, because she was like, I think we could get a sequel out of this. I think
for
where
sure.
You're writing it. And I hadn't really been planning on doing a sequel. I was just kind of like, where it buttoned itself up is just kind of fine with me. And right. I wanted to move on and write some standalones. But then Stephanie was like, well, it'd be really cool if we could do a duology and a standalone. And I was like, yeah, we could work that out. And then when I went to go outline and kind of like figure out how I would make this a duology, I was talking to my brother Vaughn about it, who also read the book and very much enjoyed it, which was surprising because Vaughn doesn't like anything. Yeah. And he would be honest with me if it wasn't good.
For sure. Like, happily honest.
Yeah. I could feel his begrudging kind of like, yeah, this is pretty good.
Yeah, fine. Like, this took me. Yeah.
But when I was talking to him about it, you know, he was invested at that point. And so I was kind of like explaining what I wanted to do with the rest of the next book, and he was like, dude, I don't think you can do that in one book. Like, I think you need to make this a trilogy. And then I hadn't really even thought of making it a trilogy, and then I kind of like sat down with pen and paper and kind of like mapped some stuff out, and I was like, actually, yeah, we might go trilogy with this. And so then I went back to Tor, and I was like, hey, can we do a trilogy? Is it cool if the three books that you bought are one story? And they were cool with that. So I do want to have it on record that like, this wasn't one of those things where Tor was like, you got to write us a trilogy so we can
have a
blue one and a yellow one and a red one. And then we can turn it into a box, and they'll all be the same size. Like, you know, that's not what they were doing. I think that Tor, at least when I was talking to Stephanie about it, she was like, yeah, that kind of encourages more book than needs to be there for story sometimes.
Totally.
But apparently a lot of authors really struggle with the second book. And I'm on the second book right now, and
it's pretty well outlined.
I mean, but it's still like, it's just, I don't want to spoil anything. Book two is like, book one is like an A to B, like road trip story. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And then book two is not that at all. Like it. Totally. And so I think it might be a little jarring. You know,
I don't think that it will be as jarring as you think it will, though, because I think not. By the end of one road trip story, people are pretty freaking sick of a road trip story,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So I think they'll be ready for the next, because at this point, it's really not about that story, and your character and your story is never about that story. It's about the relationships and the interplay between characters and the feelings that they have along the way. And so I feel like it will lend very well to, like, by the time that you get to that second story, people will be ready for that second story.
I'm so excited, man. Like,
you should be.
I would love to stay with Tor. I've made that pretty clear. Like, I could stay with Tor for the rest of my life. I've got many more books in the tank. I've got stuff I've been working on. I've got horror novels that I want to put out, and they have Tor Nightfire, which is their horror imprint. I'd love to write some YA stuff. I'd love to write all kinds of different things. So, yeah, I mean, like, this is a debut. I'm not going to try to, like, come out and be like, this is going to change everyone's life and be the best book ever written. I'm really proud of it. But I think that as I get older and as I get more familiar with this process, I'm going to put out some stuff I'm really proud of. And I'm really excited for everybody because like, I mean, obviously some people might not like what I'm doing and that's just kind of the way it goes, but like, I am trying my very best, y'all. Like I really am trying my best to write a book that I want. You know what I mean? Like this is very much what I want to put out. This is very much my own expression, and Tor has not taken that away from me. And I'm so grateful for that, because at no point have they been like, this is too political, or this is too intense, or this is too much, or you
right,
need to change
to
this.
Snub the story.
They haven't
in
tried
any
to do that
change
at
the,
all. It's been really cool.
Creative side of things. Yeah. No, you've been very much free to do that all on your own.
Mostly it's just been like, why did you do that?
Right. Like, this doesn't, like, I don't understand why this character.
Yeah,
would do
I don't
this
understand
thing.
Either.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. I should totally change that. But yeah, thank you for letting me talk about it. I'm also here to answer questions and stuff about it. Just suffice to say, like, it's a dream come true. Like, I mean, it really is. I mean, it's something that I've been thinking about since I was 20 years old. I mean, I've wanted to do this for a really long time, you know.
I can, I think pretty confidently I can speak for the entire community of our listeners in that, like, you have nothing but, like, the support. Like I said, you're always going to have the 2%, you know, hatred out there of people who are cowardly attacking you in the comment section of a YouTube video or whatever, because they can be anonymous or whatever. Or maybe they're not, maybe they even tell their name. Yeah, some people have good points, too. Yeah. But I think that our audience knows where your heart is, and that you have not, like, sold out along the way. And so I think I can speak for everybody, but, like, everyone's just stoked to see what your career has in store for them, and are stoked about the stories that you'll produce. I personally am stoked about the stories that you'll produce, and I'm stoked to see where your career goes. And I think that's 98% of our audience, which, man,
thank you guys. Seriously,
I've been so amazing. And so, like, I really just think that if you don't go looking for that negative, you know, you
no,
won't even find it, because it'll be drowned out in such a large amount of positive.
It was drowned out. I did get a couple weird comments when I posted about it.
Sure.
And I was just like, bah, whatever. Like, that's just like a few people. Like, I don't really care about that. Now, if I had posted and everybody was like, dude, what the hell are you doing?
Right, right. Like, if it was flip-flop, like, the other way around, that'd be brutal.
Like, whoa there, Evan. I don't think this is in your wheelhouse exactly. but no, I'm excited. I mean, to kind of like start shifting a little bit away from this news, still a little bit in relation to it though, my reading has taken quite the hit. Like, my, I was not expecting. So, real quick, to any authors that I've interviewed on this podcast, if you're listening right now, I'm so sorry that at the very beginning of the episode, I was like, what are you reading right now? Because they had to like dig for a cool answer, because they probably weren't reading shit, because they're working on their
book. So busy writing, like, yeah. It's like asking a chef, like, so what's your favorite restaurant? Dude, like, dude, I don't know. I'm like, in the back 100% of the time.
Yeah. So, yeah, I will say, like, my reading has definitely taken a hit. I'm still reading Empire of Storms. I'm still reading Memories of Ice. I did finish The Will of the Many, which that book rocks. That book's really good, and you should read that book.
You think so?
The new James Islington book? Yeah, it's really good. Like,
dope. Dude, I've heard nothing but good things about it, primarily from you, but like, it's, you know what,
cool.
I like more
I think,
than
like,
any
I was,
other person.
I thought about you like 5 times while I was just like, oh, Chad would love this. Chad would love this. It's very good.
You're very rarely wrong.
I think that you need to read it, man. I think it needs to go to like the top of your TBR. I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Very,
Will
very
of the Many. Okay.
It's give it like 100 pages. It's,
of course, this is James Islington we're talking about.
Yeah. It's really clear though. Like, I mean, if once you settle into it, it's just like,
because Lycanius was like not clear would be not on the top 100 words that I would choose to describe that.
Very cool though.
It's like, very cool. Very cool.
Like, Lycanius is very cool. Doesn't really make a lot of sense until the ending, which does make a lot of sense. And so Islington, I think that he's like, he knew that everybody, like, that the ending of Lycanius is like fantasy legend at this point because of just how wild it is. And he did it again at the end of, like, dude,
wow,
that's like 3 pages. It's just like, are you kidding me? Like, I was just like staring at it like, did you really just do this? We're going there, you know, and it was just after, you know, because Will of the Many, like, I feel like there's some pacing issues with it where it's just kind of like, it's extremely interesting for like 100 pages. And then it's like, we're not that interesting for like 100 pages. And then it's extremely interesting again. But it's on average, though, it is like, it took me a while to read it because I was writing and stuff. But man, I just have nothing but good things to say about it. Like, I just really, really enjoyed it. I'm
wow,
sad.
Go Islington, all right.
Yeah, I'm sad that the next book isn't out, man.
Cool.
Like, I really wish that I could pick it up and just get going with it. But I think it's coming out later this year.
Can I also just say that it makes my heart warm to see you picking up an unfinished series and mm-hmm. starting that bad boy. That's a new leaf to turn over. All right, Mr. Lycum.
The hype will get to me, you know?
Dude, hell yeah. I love it.
Also, I reread, I might do some more rereads, actually.
I
reread The Long Walk by Stephen King.
In fact, that makes a lot of sense that will help you in your journey because rereading a story.
Rereading.
You can kind of like set the story to the side and actually focus on like the literary elements within it that like make up that. Why is that a good piece of writing? You can kind of focus on that as opposed to like the mystery of the story or whatever.
Man, I'm doing it more as like the opposite where I'm like,
oh, really? Oh, you can just like not
like,
think
I already
at all.
Know what this is.
Oh,
so,
got it.
You know,
okay.
I'm
okay.
Just
okay.
Like, have fun with it. And
okay. Okay.
Because, yeah, like that was another thing that was one of the reasons why my reading took such a hit is because like I was looking at my book like so with such like critical eyes, like every sentence, every scene, every paragraph, everything. And it's good that I was doing that while I was editing, and I'm still editing and still drafting and stuff, and I'll be in that mode for quite some time. But then like I would go read something else and I'd be like, oh, that's an interesting place to put that word, or like, oh, you're doing passive voice, wow.
Ooh.
Like what, you know? And it's just like, it's so stupid to do that, but like it's really hard not to when I'm just in that mode.
Of course.
So in a way it did kind of ruin reading for me for a couple of weeks where I was just like, ugh, like I was just
can't
sick of
it.
Words, like I just
don't... That's okay, that's why we took a break.
Totally. But I reread The Long Walk, which is just like, it's such an awesome book. Like, it's just the idea for it is so cool. I would recommend it to anybody that hasn't read Stephen King. I would recommend it to anybody that hasn't read that book and likes Stephen King.
Tell me about it. I don't know anything about The Long Walk.
So it's like this kind of like vague, like dystopia in the future, kind of, not really, but he doesn't really go into a lot of detail about it. But essentially it's 100 teenage boys. I think it's relegated just to boys, but it's 100 teenage boys that start in Eastern Maine, like as far east as you can go in Maine, and they just walk, and you can't go under 4 miles an hour or something bad will happen to you. And it's like a battle royale type situation.
What?
And they walk.
That's so weird.
It's, dude, you should read it. It's really good.
It's called The Long Walk. Okay.
Yeah, it's a very good book. I could be wrong. I think it's the first Richard Bachman book.
You can't ever go under 4 miles an hour.
No. Well, you can, but you get warnings.
Where's the finish line?
Wherever the last person is, man.
What? Like, oh, it's to the... Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's so crazy. Good. And it's like really early Stephen King. I think it's 70s Stephen King.
Interesting. Well, that sounds kind of cool.
I would not recommend it, though, to people that don't like violence or... It's a pretty dark book. Like, and it's all through like one person's perspective, and it's just like, ooh, like, I would never do it.
Right.
It's funny, too, because like I bought a Fitbit, and I've been walking 10,000 steps every day.
Good for you.
Dude, it feels so much better. Because I was like very sedentary because I was just like hunched over like my little goblin desk. I've been walking a lot. And it's funny because like I've been walking so much and I was like reading The Long Walk, and like while I was like walking around a lot and stuff.
Right. Like how fast am I going? I wonder.
Could I like do this for like 70,
4 miles
80,
is like
100 miles?
A pretty regular walk, right? Like a little bit faster than normal.
It's 15 minutes a mile.
Okay. 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 It's pretty regular walking, I think.
But if you do that for 100 miles.
Oh, man. There's no way.
Your
there's
feet
no
would
way.
Fall apart, man.
Your
like,
feet
yeah.
would fall apart. Yeah.
But yeah, The Long Walk is really cool. I might even throw in another, like reread another. I was thinking about maybe rereading like 11/22/63 or like It or something.
Okay. One of the old classics.
Yeah. Or I don't know. I think I might be in my reread era because. Yeah, I mean, but I am still obviously reading Empire of Storms. I'm also reading A Child Alone with Strangers by Philip Fracassi, which is a horror novel. It's
sounds
really
horrific.
Weird.
A Child Alone with Strangers? Like, wow.
it's
that name doesn't lend itself to any sort of like, oh, I feel eased of my nervousness. They're like,
it's going in a... I don't want to give too much away about what it's about because I still honestly don't. I think it's about something that it's going to be really awesome.
Okay.
Awesome is a weird word to use for this book, but I think the idea is about to get really unique.
Okay.
But also like it went into, I'm not super far into it, but it went in a direction where I was like, okay, like,
I see you.
We're going there with this.
Okay.
But I mean, I'm excited to see. I'm reading it really slowly, but yeah, Philip Fracassi is really cool. He also wrote another book recently called, I think it's called Boys in the Valley, that I've been meaning to get to. I started Going Postal by Terry Pratchett, but like, it just didn't super grab me. Like, I really
got to be in a mood for Terry.
I just wasn't really. I think I got about 100 pages into
like
it.
Like, I know
I was
him
just
personally.
Like,
eh. Well, Terry, see, the thing about Terry is,
I don't know. I think I just wasn't quite in the mood for a Discworld book. It was just a little zany for me at the time. It just wasn't really what I was exactly looking for. But I'm, you know, I love Terry Pratchett, and I'll end up reading it again. But those were the books and things that I did. But I did a lot of other stuff because I needed to check out a little bit sometimes. I bought a gaming PC. Tor, if Stephanie, Steph, if you're listening right now, I bought the gaming PC so that I could network and build an audience. Not so that I could play lots and lots of video
play
games,
lots
which
of
is lots. What I've been
doing. I just needed a good graphics card
to
edit the video.
Typing.
Yeah,
I got myself typing. A little treat. I got myself a gaming PC.
Dude,
you know,
deserved it.
I am happy that I did it. So I'm playing Dredge right now, which is like
I'm just
really
so stoked
cool.
to have you on a PC computer. You know, away from this disgusting world of Apple and like, man, we've been so tumultuous. It's just so nice that you've come over to the side of light, you know, that like you're not operating out of the world of darkness anymore. And it just makes my heart.
We'll
just so
see
happy.
How long this PC lasts. We'll see when it starts being inexplicably difficult to use.
Oh,
we'll
get, funny. I talked to Evan about the tray months. Earlier and how to turn off programs.
About the tray.
Yes, about the tray.
I do like it. It's running very well. Like it's a beefy PC. If anybody's a PC head, I believe this is an i9 with
Ooh,
a
nice.
4060 graphics card in it.
Is that a NVIDIA?
I believe so, yeah.
Cool.
And then it's 32 gigs of DDR4 RAM and terabyte hard
solid
drive.
State?
It's liquid. Yeah, it's SSD. It's liquid cooled. It's got 10 fans in it.
Wow. Is it really loud?
No, it's a fridge, man. Like this
wow,
thing just like
awesome.
Sits here. Yeah, I'm like touching it right now. It's like actually cold.
Wow.
Like, yeah, it's
that's cool.
It's a very awesome computer. But okay, so I've been playing.
Well, we expect the awesomeness of your story to equal the awesomeness of your of technology.
I promise. I just like to put that every now and then. So, a game I've been playing is I've been playing Helldivers 2, which, oh man, Chad, I'm tempted to buy you a PS4, so a PS5, so that we can play this game together.
Tell me about it.
Dude, it is so much fun. Like it's like Starship Troopers. Oh my god, man. It's basically Starship Troopers, the video game. Like the 1997 Starship Troopers movie moved into video game form, and there's no microtransaction bullshit. There's no fucking battle pass bullshit. There's none of that
right,
stuff.
Right. None
it's
of
just,
that.
It's just like...
Oh, is it a battle royale?
No. We work as a team and kill a bunch of bugs and robots.
Oh, that's like, awesome.
That's all you do. You just kill bugs and robots.
I really love like, working...
And
together
to
towards atomic common goal.
You cannot kill. Well, you can kill each other. There's definitely friendly fire.
Yeah.
Like, and that's like, I guess the Arrowhead, I think, is the developer. I guess there was a lot of complaints about the friendly fire, and they were like, we're not taking it out because it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Everybody keeps killing each other. But dude, it's just dumb fun. You know what I mean? And like
the
graphics around
are amazing.
It is like, dude, it's such a fun game. I'm having it almost single handedly. Like ripped me away from the drudgery that was like editing and drafting and stuff, and I was able to actually like
wow.
sit with some friends and like play this game, and it's just such a blast, man. And like it's just so epic, and like I love like the it's very kind of like it's a total send up of like, you know, like we're bringing democracy by like bombing these things
totally
into Oblivion,
totally,
you know? And
but it's making fun of that fact while doing it the entire time, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's
dude,
like this
my
it's
roommate
like
played
horribly,
this
yeah.
He went through a
he
phase, and it was such
one,
an awesome looking game.
I bet he played the RTS, like the top down one. Was
no, really? This is very recent.
Oh,
this
okay,
is very
so
recent. So it was definitely the two. And like now that I'm looking at the screenshots, this was absolutely what he was playing.
And it's so cool. Like,
is
it's
it?
Just,
dope.
Oh man, and so I'm really excited about that. I downloaded some other games on Steam. I downloaded Path of Exile, which I've been playing with my brother, which is pretty fun. It's kind of like a Diablo, Pillars of Eternity. Like Divinity type game.
Okay.
And I also downloaded Elden Ring again because I just
Because why not?
I have to. I'm also streaming on Twitch. Don't worry about it, everybody. Like, I'm streaming, like, I'm like jumping between TikTok and Twitch, and
I'm go watch him. Where is
I'm
that?
Not expecting
go there.
To be like a huge like Twitch streamer or anything. But if anybody does want to hang out while I play video games, I have been streaming like almost every day. Check it out. It's really easy to find me. It's just Evan BRK on Twitch, and I'm on TikTok streaming too. And it's cool to like.
Don't become a Rothfuss streamer, though.
I
let's not go down
about
that
to bring
road.
That up. Okay. I was just about to talk about that. So
we all know the dangers
promise,
of streaming.
I promise it's not what it is. I've liked video games this whole time, and I've been able to write books.
That's
story.
So funny. We're just about to bring that up.
I was just about to bring that up. Yeah, because, oh, yeah, it is a thing.
It is a thing,
I don't think I ever stream for more than like an hour or two at a time. I get... You know, I gotta go work on stuff.
You ain't gotta defend yourself, man. I haven't seen you any sort of problematically streaming. I just wanted to make the joke, because I thought that was funny.
I don't know, maybe I will. Like, I can't promise anything. No, I'm not gonna be doing that. But I really like it. I'm not very good with a mouse and keyboard yet. I never did that as a kid. You know, like,
oh,
I was
right.
always playing. It's weird.
My roommate has a controller that he just plugs into the back of his PC, and so he just plays with his controller all the time.
Yeah, but like. So for like Helldivers and for like Elden Ring and like Hollow Knight and stuff, I'll use a controller. But like, I'm playing this game called Dredge right now, where you're just a little boat, and it's like kind of like the spectral ghosty kind of like fishing game. You would like it. You would like it a lot, actually, Chad.
Wow. Okay.
But like, you kind of start with like nothing, and then you kind of like explore the islands and like pick up scrap and
I
like,
would like those
improve
games,
your boat
yeah.
and stuff. But I've been streaming that, and it's been really fun.
How big is your boat? What's it called?
I don't think it has a name, actually.
No, you don't,
I don't think you can
okay.
name it. But it's kind of creepy. You should play it.
I don't know if you went from like a sloop to like a, you know, a yawl or, you know, some sort of.
I don't know any terms.
No, okay, that's fine. That's fine. I've been drowning in them for the last 2 weeks, so we will not get into my C word knowledge right now. My maritime information.
Last thing I want to talk about is I watched Three Body Problem. The new.
Oh, cool.
I know. I watched the whole show.
Did you just start and then finish it?
Yeah, I watched every episode.
Good for you.
In rapid succession.
Yeah, that's how you got to do it.
I did it. Yeah.
Tell me your thoughts.
Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. Start to finish.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Oh, whole thing. Yeah. In one sitting.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I started and finished 14 hours later.
Okay. So I read the books. I was pretty impressed with like how they were able to like get a lot of that information to everybody. Like, and you know what I mean? It was like very. Very, very cool.
They were dumbed it down really well.
Yeah, because the books don't do that.
Oh, really? Season Lee is just like, if you're not smart enough, you're not smart enough.
I had a rough time with those books. I was not smart enough. Like, there's like whole chapters where it's like two physicists that are just like having a talk about physics. You know what I mean? And it's just like, I don't know what any of this is. Like, I had to have my phone with me and like look stuff up.
Oh, wow.
Actually, for those books. But they're really good books. You should read them. But so with Three Body Problem, I felt like the first like five episodes were like really good.
Real good.
And then like the last couple were kind of boring. Like,
they kind of undermined the whole Three Body Problem thing.
Should we talk about it with spoilers? Here, I'm going to let everyone know real quick. Like, we're going to have a spoiler talk right now.
Right now.
And this will be the last thing we're talking about. We're not going to do a question of the week or
any fun factoid.
This is a long episode already, and I want to get.
So if you haven't seen or read The Three Body Problem, stop right now.
Yep. So we're gonna spoil it. I'm gonna be very clear. Spoilers for The Three
right
Body
now.
Problem.
Get out here. Go
right now.
We love
Thank
it.
You.
We love
Thank
it.
You for hanging out. Okay. So a few different weird things that I think I can't remember much of the book because I read them like 10 years ago or like 5 years ago or whatever, and I've read a lot of books since then. So if I'm wrong about some of this stuff, let me know in the Discord. What I'm wrong about and put a spoiler tag on it. But is it weird to you that like the aliens would be like, we'll see you in 400 years.
Dude, super weird.
Like, why would they do that?
Why would they like give them a heads up like that?
Yeah.
Like, what strategical advantage?
But yeah. Like, I mean, cause they're like, oh, your technology is going to grow. So we're going to send these. So
totally. They've
like,
started this chess
tell
game.
Them that too, though.
Totally.
Like, why would they tell them about the Sophons? And then they're like, you are bugs. And it's like, but why? Like, it's creepy and cool.
I think it was to learn about the current species on board the planet. To, like, prepare. They were trying to gain information. And in order to gain information, unfortunately, they had to give it. And so it's like they couldn't figure out what sort of species we were and get like a relationship built with us without exposing some of their hand as well.
That's a super good answer, actually.
Thank you. I've thought about it quite a bit because it is strategically
a gigantic pothole. Like I was just like,
huge pothole.
Why would they do that? Yeah.
The only reason that I can think of is they have to expose some things about themselves in order to learn about us, and they want the 400 years to prepare to make sure that when they come, they can truly be our overlords.
Well, they can't prepare. That's the thing. They're on their way.
But they can do things like they sent the computer, right? The eye in the sky thing, you know, so they can do stuff like that.
What do you think about the wall facers stuff? Like the idea that like they couldn't talk about what they were planning because the aliens can't like see inside our heads. I thought that was so fucking
cool. I thought that was pretty cool too.
Yeah. It was really,
totally.
I think that's,
and they like one of the guys was like, no, I'm not one of the electorate. Like I'm not the guy. And they're like, yeah, no, you're totally not. Okay. And they just like, yeah.
Whatever you say.
Yeah, just kind of forcing him into that. I really like that element to it. But yeah, there definitely did seem some like I'm not sure that once the aliens, like if the aliens, I would love to know their starting set of data, right? Because like if they knew the level of technology that we were compared to them, then it wouldn't really matter. Like what they gave us was far more than what we gave them.
Yeah, and I'm trying to
in order to prepare, right? Because we're the lessers, we're the underdog.
Dude, it's because I've literally read like almost 1,000 books since I've read these books, and I just can't remember. I feel like one of those, like your explanation is really good, and I also feel like there's something that sews it up. I just can't remember exactly what it was.
Me neither.
But it's a really good show. I mean, like I was really impressed with like the pacing of it was really good. I mean, the scene with like the ship where like cuts all those people up and everything with the nanofibers and stuff, like
that was brutal. It's so funny because of course the first thing that her technology is used for is like destroying like an entire ship of civilians, right? Just like chop them up, put them into little like Resident Evil cubes, you know. It was pretty gross, but it reminded me a lot of Christmas tree farms.
What?
Because like if you are a Christmas tree farmer, you are a generational thinker. Because like planting things that won't be able to be harvested for 17, 20, 30 years down the road. If you're 50, that means you're not going to be alive by the time that your harvest that you're planting right now is able to be worth anything, right? And so it was like – it was a really cool – like most problems that we encounter in novels are like – or any story or just the world, you're able to fix right now. They don't typically have this longevity of the Christmas tree farmer in mind. And it's just like it's cool for me first off that like people believe in that sort of longevity, right? Like that Christmas tree farmer has to have a lot of faith that like this world is not gonna be like invaded by some other country or something. Nothing is going to change over that plot of land for the next
I think that's why Christmas tree farms are like family farms. Like they're like
totally
it's like a family thing.
Totally, and it's passed down from generation to generation. You're totally correct on that. And it just like it's cool to me that exists, that sort of foresight exists, you know. And so in my brain it's just like a lot like the Christmas tree farmers, and that this whole problem is not a problem for our generation. It's a problem for like 3 or 4 generations down the road. And that's such an interesting separation from the problem, because like how do you even start solving that problem? But we need to if we have any hope of being able to defeat these coming alien overlords, right? And so I just thought it was a really unique approach to a problem, and one that like you literally won't see the outcome of.
Yeah, it's like I feel like the climate change situation is kind of parallel to that too, where it's like how do you motivate people what's interesting about that too is apparently a lot of people, there's like a drop off, like almost a measurable drop off of people tuning out of the show when they found out that the aliens wouldn't be there for 400 years.
Oh really? Because it's like whatever.
Isn't that interesting? Like, isn't that interesting? That
those people are not Christmas tree farmers.
And they you literally don't care about climate change. I'm just kidding. I don't know. But it is like, I feel like the parallel is there in the sense that it's like, okay, you know, we have like all these, there's like 80-year-old people in the American Senate and stuff that are like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Probably not a big deal.
And I'm probably going to die before this is a problem.
I thought that was an interesting thing in Three Body Problem, where it was like, the main character, the guy that plays Davos in Game of Thrones, was like, I'm going to wake up every year to check on the progress of this. And I thought it was interesting that guy kind of like, he's kind of sketchy.
He's kind of sketchy.
I thought that was really interesting that it was just like, I don't know what to think about this guy.
Well, his whole kind of sketchiness is brought about because, like, the whole brain reading thing, right? He has to keep some things inside of his brain, or else, like, the aliens are going to know about it and start preparing for it. So he kind of has to
be... like, turn the power off in the plane? Well, yeah, oh, God, dude. That was so scary. Man.
Yeah, it was... definitionally, it has to be kind of sketchy. I also liked the fact that the aliens didn't know about deception.
That was... okay. See, and that, you know what, when I was watching it, I was like, of course somebody would ruin this for everybody.
Totally,
you know
what I mean? Totally.
Of course some guy.
Because, like, the aliens had no concept of it.
See, what I'm thinking, and I don't...
Or you think that was deception.
Yeah.
Oh, it just kind of blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah, they're crafty aliens.
They are crafty aliens, because maybe they were looking for a reason to cut off those people, or to stop. Maybe they had felt they got the worth with their one main communicator, that guy who, like, could never get him back on the horn, right?
You are bugs.
Yeah, you are bugs, dude.
Can you imagine if every single screen in the world just blinked, you are bugs?
Oh, my goodness.
And then it's so funny because, like, another, like, kind of weird plot hole-ish thing that I was just like, okay, like, was that, like, the world just kind of, like, reverted back to normal? It was like they had,
dude,
like, this
super,
they had
quickly,
like, this 5-minute thing where it was like, oh, there's, like, riots in these cities, and then, like, everyone goes back to Burger King for work, you know? It's like,
totally,
dude,
totally.
Are you kidding me? Like, aren't the entire fabric of our society would completely disintegrate?
Do you think so? That,
dude, if every single screen on the entire planet at the same time,
yeah, but then you learn
war bugs, and
that the
aliens,
things calling you, that won't be here for 400 years.
I guess that's a really good point.
It's that's a pretty calming thought. You're like, oh, well, this one's definitely not going to affect me.
But
like 100% not going to affect me. Okay, cool.
But if we want to have this conversation, like, I do think that if extraterrestrial intelligent life was revealed, it would have a very intense effect on society.
Far-reaching
consequences. I don't know if it would ruin everything, but I do think that, like, the paradigm,
I think it would make things
would
a lot
and probably will shift when that happens. I don't know in what way, really, but, like,
I think force us to get our ish together, right? So we could face this together.
Like,
maybe.
Well, COVID didn't do that. Like,
totally.
I mean, like,
yeah.
But, like,
but it's not as clear.
It's a different thing. Yeah. But, like, I don't know. I feel like spiritually, I think it'd be really difficult for a lot of people to square
with.
I think, but it depends on where you lie on that spectrum, too, obviously. And then
a lot of people have no problem with that spiritually.
Exactly.
Some people do.
But, and then also this idea that we're alone, I feel like, or not idea that we're alone, but the lack of evidence that we're not, I think is kind of baked into our society in a weird way. And then I think that, like,
though it's changing quick,
I think introducing it in a very real, very public way would shift things around on such a subtle yet exponentially effective level. You know what I mean? Like, I think that, like,
I mean, we see that happening literally right now, because, like, there's been multiple hearings over the last year that the government is like, there are things in our skies we cannot defend against. There is technology. We don't know what it is. And we have them on camera. And here is the video of it. I mean, you had David Graves and all those people appear in Congress under oath.
Yeah.
Saying these things. That's not even fringe anymore. That's like the Schumer report, like all sorts of things have come out that, like, have popularized this and moved it into the mainstream, in my opinion, at least.
My theory, if we want to get into this, about aliens, is that I think this is one of my spacier beliefs.
Bro, they have to be. Definitionally, you have to be spacey and well choice of words.
I think that there are probably extraterrestrials or an extremely advanced civilization living under the ocean. Thank you, James Cameron. I think that...
Dude, they've always been here.
I think that there might be some kind of intelligent life that is observing Earth and is like, these people are weird, you know what I mean? But, like, and also I think that the Earth itself is such an amazing planet that they're like,
we are privileged.
Why don't we just hang out and make sure they don't ruin it? Like, really ruin it, not just for themselves, but for everything. Like, because they probably see us on, like, the same level as every other animal on the planet. But, like,
you ever want a good book that does not, it actually tries very hard to remain religiously connected? It's trying to come at it from a scientist perspective, but it's called The Privileged Planet. And it's about our planet, because we have this idea that, like, oh, you know, because of the Goldilocks zone, right? The distance from a sun that a planet has to be in order for life to be possible. And we find all of these different stars and all these different planets. We do some simple math that says, well, there's got to be at least 200 trillion possible planets that could have life. And it's like, well, the Goldilocks zone is one of an ever-increasing number of variables that has to be tuned just perfectly for life to happen.
For so life that this, we know about.
Well said.
Like carbon-based, the exact kind of life that lives here.
Totally. Yeah. Which we only have the ability to know about, right? That's so it's like, but you're not wrong in that there totally could be other forms of life that
like,
manifests
itself. They could live on like nitrogen
in.
And they don't need
sunlight
or anything.
Yeah, like silicon-based beings. In fact, there's a lot of... Anyway, there's this idea that we live in a back alley of some solar system and that we're common. And that's not the case at all that we see in the universe, at least from what we can observe, which is not much. I will give him that. But from what we can see, we have privilege beyond on this planet. We've never found another planet even kind of close to this one.
Oh, I mean, see, I would take issue with that, just in the sense that I have a feeling there are countless planets that could harbor life in both ways that we understand and ways that we don't. On top of that, though, I would put a pin in that and then consider time and consider civilization. And like, dude, like, so that's when you get into like, okay, the variables of like, okay, did this civilization figure out how to
early
travel
on?
But, well, what I'm saying though is like, I think that kind of feeds into the Fermi paradox, and it's just like,
sure,
if there are civilizations, there are reasons why we haven't heard from them, and it's because of these ridiculously vast differences, not only in space but in time. So it's like, if there was a civilization at some point that was able to travel in an interstellar way
quicker than light,
but maybe they were around 4 billion years ago and they've since died out, and there was no way we would ever know about that. You know what I mean? So it's like, not only does there have to be like a certain proximity, but there would also have to be a proximity in
time.
Timing
thing.
So that's why it's like,
you're right, it's an x-axis, it's an x and a y-axis.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
It doesn't just have to be on one of them.
No. And so that's why, and dude, have you seen like that, I don't know if this is even true, but have you seen like that picture of like how far our radio waves have gone? Like, it's
no,
like a circle that's like a
round. I'm sure it's not very far.
It's not very far.
Not very far.
But it is,
yeah,
really
like,
cool in the three body problem where they amplify it with the sun. And dude,
totally.
Oh my God, that note that one leaves, that he's like, I'm a pacifist on our world. Do not respond.
Yeah, respond.
That was so scary. Oh my God.
That was a scary sort of note. Like, whoa.
It was. But maybe that was them saying that or something, or like, you know, like,
I certainly do not report to have all the answers, but I think that there is a battle being fought on our planet and has been for the last, since always, of between good and evil. And I think that the things that we are seeing in our skies are not things from other planets that have always been here and have always been part of the game.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think maybe like they're kind of watching and they're like, all right, we'll intervene, like the Cuban Missile Crisis.
I think there's restrictions on how they can intervene.
Right,
built
maybe it's like the planet Earth,
natural world.
People that are like, we can't like intervene. But like,
because if you look at all the physicists, right, there's like 12 dimensions, and we have like no access to some of them. And I think these are higher dimensional beings that are living amongst us, kind of, and have access somehow to come into ours sometimes. And I'm not sure what exactly Aleister Crowley ritual brings them into our view, but something like that.
It's funny, like, I feel like if you even took like a purely materialist stance on it, it would still be incredibly interesting. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, that's
the
fun thing about it. It's like, even if you don't go down like a kind of like
spiritual
more
rabbit hole.
Yeah. Even if you did stick to a wholly materialistic within the bounds of physics discussion, it's like, this is so wild. Like, this,
you
is,
can't keep it in the bounds of physics.
I know,
breaks it almost immediately.
Dude,
yeah,
that's why I love the three body problem so much, is because I feel like Zijin Liu was kind of like, all right, I know so much about this subject. I know so much about physics. I know so much about this that I can break the rules. And
totally.
Oh, it's so brilliant, man.
It is really cool. Yeah, I find it, you know, if we bloviate about aliens ever again, which I'm certainly planning on it. So, you know, because I really, and tell me if the Discord if I'm wrong, but like, is there anyone who finds this not interesting?
I don't know.
I don't think so. It's like, it's like such a huge question.
Space
and
is fairly big.
Evidence for it all the time. New evidence for it even is coming out daily. And so it's just like, man, I think
a lot of it is total hoax, though.
A lot of it is total BS. Yeah. But I think it's infinitely interesting. And I just can't imagine a person who's like, no, I don't give this any extra thought, or doesn't find it at least passively interesting.
No,
right?
I mean, I don't think anybody doesn't think it's interesting. I think there are definitely, I respect an opinion or a belief where people say we've just been floating out here by ourselves this whole time. Like nothing has come over. The distances are just way too vast. And it's just the nature of the universe that like we really are just kind of sitting out.
What the hell do we know about the nature of the universe?
Yeah,
you know, like modern physics explanations are coming real short in the last like decade. Like we're starting to unravel space-time as our theory of everything because it just doesn't work anymore.
And you know, given enough time, I mean, like if you went back into 1910 and tried to explain how an iPhone worked, you know what I mean? Like they'd just be like, that doesn't make any.
What's that? Like technology is magic. If you could have no way of, if it's properly advanced enough.
Yeah, exactly. So. You know, the idea of like, you know, doing the cliche kind of like fold this piece of paper and put a pencil through it, you know.
Totally.
Kind of,
yeah.
But like if you came to me and you were like, Evan, at some point, a civilization in our vast, unimaginably huge universe was able to do that, I'd be like, of course. Like, yeah, absolutely. They, what would be even more interesting to me and more impressive to me is that civilization had advanced enough and gone that long without killing each other and killing themselves. You know what I mean? And like, that's why I think that, and this might sound a little bit overly optimistic maybe, or naive if it does.
Future is bright, man.
But like, dude, I think that if a civilization can get here, they have progressed so far past violence.
So far.
Like they know exactly how to move along without it. Like they're not going to, like, unless it's like this thing that's like they have to, like there's no, you know what I mean? So
unless they're under a brutal totalitarian dictatorship, of course, that is,
I think they would have moved past that too.
You think so?
Like for humans to get maybe not, because I mean maybe for humans to get to that point they'd have to go through some kind of unification.
You know, yeah.
They would, yeah.
I don't know, though. I really don't. But I think it could manifest itself in, just like you're saying, this sort of Star Trek world of like perfect, where we've all decided to like, you know, no borders.
Luxury
and
gay space communism.
Other. What?
Luxury gay space communism.
Luxury gay space communism. Yeah, it could equal
the
that.
The future I'm fighting for. Yes.
Or else it could be more, you know, foundation style, where you have one ruler like ruling the cosmos and that's what's unified us all, sort of thing. So like I could kind of see it going either way, but you know, what do I know? I have yet to see either of those in reality, so I don't know. I will forever be, even if I'm proven wrong, because I think there is benefit to believing in the world being a brighter place and optimism. I really believe that optimism will serve you even if it's not true.
Oh yeah. No.
Yeah.
I think optimism is a lot less ignorant than people say it is.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Informed optimism is how I like to describe it.
And nihilistic optimism.
Yeah.
It's all going to be fine.
It's all right. Well, should we get out of here?
Yeah, let's get out of here.
All right,
so good to talk to you again, man. Yeah.
Dude, so good to talk to you. I truly missed you. And everyone listening, man. Oh, one more thing before we wrap up. I have book mail.
You have a book mail? I opened mine.
Because somehow when we take a break, our listeners send me a book, which is just the best ever. You guys are so amazing. So I just opened this here, and this is, and I am so excited that this was this book from Sarah. I love this even more than the first book. I hope you do too. Double exclamation points from Sarah. Bookshops and Bone Dust, the Travis Baldry.
Yay, that one's so good.
Dude, I know that you read it a little bit, and even we had Travis Baldry on the podcast since then, but I have not read this book, and I'm really, really excited to. I kind of fell in love with Travis Baldry's approach on Legends and Lattes, his first book, which was just such a good feel-good debut, like just nom-nom goodness. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to this book, and I hope he does the same thing, really, honestly. I could do with that same exact story repackaged, given to me again. Honestly, yeah. I could do that, so. Please, I
like this one more. I really did.
Really? Well, that's what Sarah said that too. She said she liked this one more than the first one. Sarah, thank you so much. I received this probably about a week and a half ago. And I took it as like a time to get back to work, boys, sort of thing, you know. And I hope that's what it was intended for, Sarah, because it really
time to get back to work, boys.
It was just really like inspiring to me that like, you know, even though we haven't been making episodes, someone still like had me in mind enough to send me a book, which meant really, really, really a lot to me. And I've just, you know, I've had some difficulties these last few weeks, and your book could not have arrived at a better time for me mentally. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Sarah. It means a lot to me and will always mean a lot to me when people send me books. It's just, man, I will not be ashamed to admit that I have cried multiple times from receiving books, and sure that I will on multiple times in the future. So please keep sending them. That means everything to me.
Speaking of sending books, I got a package, but when you told me you couldn't record for another week, I was like, well, I'm opening it.
Dude, it was really hard for me not to open
this. Yeah, I was like, oh, well, I mean, if I have to. So,
if I have to, I'll do it.
Melanie sent me this package, and this is 4 books. And thank you so much, Melanie. So I got Dawn Shard, which is from the Stormlight Archive, a novella, which I believe you're supposed to read between Words of Radiance and Oathbringer. So when we are doing Stormlight.
We shall be doing Stormlight.
Also, I'm a tour author, so like,
oh right,
maybe Harrison,
we've been on his radar, dude. I've gotten emails back from his team, so
maybe we could get the Stormin Mormon himself.
The Stormin Mormon. Did you just make that up?
No, Vaughn did.
Oh, that's so good. I know. I'm not removing
that. Is that rude? Like, should we? Like,
no,
that, is
dude,
okay?
He is
like,
the Stormin Mormon.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, for sure. No, that's perfect. I feel like even he would be stoked with that.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. So I would, I'll try. But anyway, we are doing a Stormlight read this year. And so Dawn Shard, we are going to be reading Edge Dancer and Dawn Shard, obviously.
Hell yeah.
Because we have to read the novellas between the books. I believe Edge Dancer is between Way of Kings and Words of Radiance, and Dawn Shard is between Words of Radiance and Oathbringer. If I'm wrong about that, please correct me. Thank you so much, Melanie. I also got Pretty Girls by Karen Slaughter. I've heard Karen Slaughter is like one of the best thriller writers in the world. So, and this is the one to start with.
Her last name is Slaughter. So.
I know.
How'd she nail that?
Actually her last name, too.
Wow.
I don't think she changed it. That could be wrong. But yeah, I've heard that this book is really good. My friend Brandon Baker really, really recommends it. Karen Slaughter.
Gosh, she got Karen and Slaughter. That's a great horror name. Both of her names lend to the horror genre.
Also, Melanie sent me The Great Gatsby, which maybe our listeners
might be... I
hate
that book, but yeah.
I've heard... our listeners might be surprised to hear that I have never read this book. I've never
read that's why she sent it to you. I think we probably got in a conversation
Have I mentioned that before? Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a go.
Because I very much dislike it. I've read it like 4 times.
Really?
Oh, yeah, totally. I read it before high school.
Like
I read it in high
school.
It's
a great American classic. It's like
it's
the,
a great
like the book.
Every time I read it, I blame myself, and I think I'm just not like evolved. I'm mature enough for the story. And every time I get down, I'm like, ugh, what a vapid tale of like.
Really? It means more than you think it means.
I'm sure that it does. It has to. It has to. Yeah. It has to. But like, man, it was probably, again, another book not written for me because I really dislike it. And have tried 3 different times reading it from cover to cover. And man, it's just not for me.
It's just not for you.
Just not for me.
Last book that Melanie sent me is Beach Read by Emily Henry. I read Book Lovers earlier this year and really enjoyed it. I really like Emily Henry a lot. So thank you for this. I've heard that this is an excellent book by Emily Henry. I've heard all of her books are really good. They're just like...
it's a beach read, not a beach of a read, just to be clear.
Yeah, it's called Beach Read. But I think it's like a... I don't know, people call it a romance book, but I feel like Book Lovers, like, yeah, it was kind of a romance book. It was just like a character study. It was like focused in on somebody who was like kind of a workaholic and like her relationship with her sister and stuff. And it was just like really interesting to read, you know.
Cool.
Some people are just really good at putting someone in a situation and then you kind of just read about how they feel about it, and it's just like
totally.
So and then like having a romantic element to it is just icing on that cake, you know. It's really nice. And Emily Henry is definitely very good at it. That's what I got.
What a beautiful way to wrap this episode up, man. Some gifts from the people that we love the most. You guys are truly the best audience. Thanks for bearing with us on this break here. Evan's obviously been doing his thing. I've been doing mine. And it has been such an alleviation of stress to know that you guys are still there for us and sending us free books, even. Like, we do not deserve you as an audience. You're lovely, and I cannot be full of gratitude enough to have you along for this book review killy of a ride, because it has been very good for my soul, and I think I can speak for both of us when I say that. So thanks so much for continuing with us even after our little breaks.
Everybody, seriously, thank you for being patient with us. We have many more episodes for you in the future, but until then, hope you have an amazing rest of your day, and of course, happy reading.
Bye, everybody.